This episode is brought to you by NordVPN. Listen up, nerds. No. Good evening, Mr. and Mrs. America, from border to border and coast to coast and all the ships at sea.
What?
Hello, friends. Do you have a computer? Of course you do, because it's not 1987. Hell, you're listening to this on some kind of computer right now. But do you have a VPN?
Oh,
what's a VPN, you ask? Well, my friend, a VPN is a virtual private network and it offers two key benefits: enhanced privacy and security online. But VPNs do a lot more than that. VPNs shield your IP address, change your browsing location, and make online life easier. It's all about safety and security, my friends. But like everything else in life, it's also about watching TV. Don't let your paid subscriptions go to waste. I use NordVPN to access my home content while I'm traveling. Wink, wink. Plus, secure your connection on public Wi-Fi in airports, hotels, cafes, anywhere you go when you're traveling. There's over 6,300 servers in 111 countries, and you can find a nearby server for the best VPN speeds. NordVPN is easy to use. Connect with one click or enable auto-connect for zero-click protection. And it's got amazing speed. NordVPN is one of the fastest VPNs out there. And with just one NordVPN account, you can use it on 6 devices. It supports every major platform: Windows, Android, iOS, macOS, Linux, even Android TV. I think those are all real. Don't miss out on all the awesome benefits for using a VPN. Go to nordvpn.com/ifanboy today for a risk-free 30-day money-back guarantee. The link's in the show notes. Once again, that's nordvpn.com/ifanboy.
This show is sponsored by BetterHelp. You ever feel like you really need to get something off your chest? This is like a real thing. Like, if you're mad, if you're upset, if there's something going on, like there's often for me an idea. Maybe it's a wrong. Maybe it's a moment. It's an injustice. It's something that just you keep going on and on, over and over in your mind about it, and like that can create anger and resentment or shame, whatever it is. And very often, I have found, I am not a therapist, I have found that when you let it out, when you give it voice, when you say it out loud, sometimes it makes you feel better because you've expressed it. And sometimes it makes you realize like, oh, this is not a big deal, but it's been stuck in my head. So you give voice to those things, and it can make you feel a lot better. And shock of all shocks, therapy is one of those things that can help you do that. It can help you be able to say those things in a place where you don't need to worry about the repercussions of it, work your way through it, figure out coping skills, how to get around it, you know, find ways to deal with that stuff instead of letting it fester. If you are thinking of starting therapy, if anything I said sounds familiar, you're like, oh, maybe my life would be a little better if I could deal with that kind of thing, you should give BetterHelp a try. It's fully online. It is convenient, flexible. It is suited to your schedule. That's the idea. That's what they're going for. You can fill out a brief questionnaire to get matched with a licensed therapist. That's a big deal. You can switch therapists at any time for no additional charge. That personal connection, I believe, to be super important. Again, I'm not a professional. Get it off your chest with BetterHelp. Visit BetterHelp.com/ifanboy today. You get 10% off your first month. That is BetterHelp, HELP.com/ifanboy.
You are listening to the iFanboy.com Pick of the Week podcast, episode 170, sponsored by Afro Samurai from Funimation and Discount Comic Book Service. Hey, welcome to the iFanboy Pick of the Week podcast. This is episode 170, as I said, not 1 minute ago. I am Josh. I'm here with Ron.
Hey-o.
And Connor. Connor caught a touch of something.
The something. The I'm going to die.
Yeah. sicker than had been in 5 years is what I hear.
Yeah. So.
Both ends. I don't really know. We didn't get into details. But filling in, Sonia Harris.
Hello.
Hi.
Hey, good to have you.
Thank you.
All right.
So. And get well soon, Connor.
Yes.
Of course.
Or whatever. We'll see how this goes. iFanboy.com is our website. We like comic books, so we started up this website. We read a bunch of comic books, and every week one of us has the task of picking the best book that they read this week, and that is called the Pick of the Week. Then that person writes a review about it on the site. We come here and we talk about that, the other books from the week, and then other miscellanea, other things like that that we want to talk about. Before we get going, we're going to talk about the books that came out this week, so if you haven't read them, come back after you have, because we don't want to ruin them for you. There it is. Ron, you had the pick of the week.
I did have the pick of the week, and it was, you know, it was a good week. Actually, what was really interesting about this week was that I don't think DC Comics published anything.
They might have.
They did. I think we put one in later in the thing, but I didn't buy any DC books this week, so it was all, a big old stack of Marvel and Image Comics for me. And as I read through all my comics, I ended up looking, you know, doing the, you know, I read them all, and then I kind of laid them all out in Connor style, you know, kind of with a nod to our sick friend. And really what I ended up with was, you know, Amazing Spider-Man number 585 was the one that had me gasping the most through it. And it really made me realize that, you know, here we are, it's been a year since, you know, since the whole One More Day thing happened and the whole rebooting of the title and going to this somewhat weekly schedule. So after a total year, it's safe to say that, you know, it's you know, now's the time where you can reflect and you can say, okay, was this experiment a success or not, or was this, you know, new approach a success? And, you know, I think not only is it a success, this is possibly one of the best books that Marvel's putting out right now, purely in that it's everything that I think of when I think of a Marvel comic book. You know, it's our flagship character, it's Spider-Man, and it's, you know, it's being done in a modern way, but that's true to the roots of the character. And it is just so, you know, kind of, I don't want to say, you know, suspenseful and thrilling. And, you know, the fact that they're doing the semi-weekly schedule, I think, kind of plays up to it. We talked about it last week, actually, because last week was the first issue of the story arc, which is called Character Assassination, written by Mark Guggenheim and drawn.
You've been drinking.
I've been drinking, I have, yeah.
Character Assassin.
But it was written by Mark Guggenheim and is drawn by John Romita Jr. with great inks by the great Klaus Janson. And last issue, we talked about it because Harry Osborn had proposed to his girlfriend, and there was a great full-page splash on the Statue of Liberty of him proposing. And this picks up right at that point where she gently turns him down. Or within the second page of the book, you see the kind of violent side of Harry come out as he reacts to her, and he kind of gets angry that she says no. And that, you know, subtly plants the seed of doubt that maybe Harry is the real identity of this new villain, Menace, who is part of the intrigue of this story arc, is who is Menace. Mm-hmm. And so right off the bat, the book starts with you kind of, okay, I know where they're going with this. And then what I realized as I read the whole issue is that in the 22 pages of this issue, there were like four or five plot threads going on independent of one another, but all tying into each other. Harry's girlfriend is working for her father is running for mayor, and she's working for the campaign, and there's this big mayoral race. J. Jonah Jameson, who lost the Bugle like a half a year ago with this, reemerges as a TV commentator. They're trying to track down this serial killer who's leaving Spider-Man's spider tracers behind, so everyone thinks Spider-Man's a serial killer. We know it's not him, but we don't know who it is. And in this issue, it leads us to believe that it might be Peter's roommate. You know, so like, there's just one thing after another is happening, and all the while, it's happening behind the scenes where Peter's just getting back from getting his ass kicked in the previous issue, and it's that classic Spider-Man just beat up on his last legs. He's made a sling for his dislocated shoulder out of webbing, and, you know, and sure enough, this, you know, this Menace villain, you know, pops back up to kind of terrorize the city, and so Spider-Man, you know, picks himself up and drags himself back out, and there's a great two-page spread that Romita did of him leaving, and it's like one of those ones where you see the fluid motion of him jumping and then shooting the web and swinging, and you kind of see the kind of silhouette of him doing the flip, you know, kind of like Marcos Martin did that in his run, or Martin. And it was just, you know, this issue is another example of just how great John Romita is. He's one of the, you know, the current masters of the comic arts right now, and it's just like every page is just one after another just amazing to see him do it. And I talked about in my review on iFanboy.com is how John Romita Jr. was on Spider-Man for years in the early, you know, from the 90s into the early 2000s, and they took him off it and let him do things like the Eternals, and well, see, he did that Century miniseries or maxi series, whatever it is.
World War Hulk,
yeah, and all that stuff was good, but to me it was never as good as when he's on Spider-Man. Mm-hmm. And this is just the you know, the proof of that is just that when he's drawing Spider-Man, that's when he is at his best, and the art is was just so great to see. And then what happens at the end of it is, you know, Spidey ends up fighting Menace and gets his ass kicked even more and passes out. And at the very end of the book, we get two, and I'm going to spoil it, you know, we're spoiling it for folks who haven't read the book or aren't reading it, but it ends with Spidey, you know, kind of passing out and waking up to being shackled by the cops and being read his rights. And so first I've got, you know, in reading it was one of those, like, I literally gasped like I was 10 years old going, and I thought in my head, how is he going to get out of this one?
and then you play the music stand.
Right, exactly. Ta-da! And then the next two pages, we see Menace getting home, and we you know, we kind of realize they're going to reveal him on the last page, and you sure enough, you think it's Harry Osborn, but it's not. and that twist was not, I did not see that twist coming. And within those last three pages of Spider-Man getting read his rights to finding out the identity of Menace, it just kind of reminded me that this is what Spider-Man should be, and this is what it's been missing over the past 10 years when JMS was writing it. I think independent of Mary Jane or not or whatever, it's this style of storytelling that is so unique and so, you know, Marvel, so Spider-Man based that Guggenheim and Slott and the other writers have just got down pat. And I don't know if Steve Wacker deserves the credit as the editor, kind of keeping it all together or whatnot, but this is just like, this is as good as I remember Spider-Man ever being.
Well, you know, the question, like, is, so what would you credit that to? Would you credit that to the weekly schedule that's sort of so fast-paced that you're getting story constantly, or the changes that they made in his status quo?
I don't think it has anything to do with the status quo. I think a lot of it has to do with the publishing schedule, in the fact that on a weekly basis, you don't, you know, like, at least me, I read a lot of comics, and I don't, some, you know, let's be honest, sometimes I forget who people are. You know, those recap pages are really helpful, you know, or sometimes you got to go dig up your previous issue and go, oh, right, yeah. But the fact that it's coming out week after week is building on the momentum, and it's still fresh in my head when I get the next issue. Mm-hmm. I think that has a lot to do with it.
Now, Sonny, you picked this up.
Yeah.
You picked this up apropos of nothing.
I did, because you said it was the pick of the week, and I never read any of the comics you guys read, so I thought, I'll read it.
Yeah. Now, how did that work? Did you follow it? Did you have fun with it?
Well, yeah, I've read a lot of Spider-Man over the years, and I like Spider-Man, and I have an idea of what's going on right now, just because it's hard to avoid. I mean, I don't know. I seem to pick up these things through osmosis and being around you a lot, yeah. I suppose. So I kind of had an idea what was happening. I read some other Marvel titles, yeah, and I read Kick-Ass, so I'm familiar with what Romita's currently doing. Yeah. So I read it. Yeah, it's a comic, right?
That's the thing. It isn't The Watchmen, and it isn't this, you know, like, you know, genre defining book, but it's just a really good Spider-Man comic book.
Okay.
You know, like, that's like when you ask me what makes Spider-Man good, it's I can hold this arc up as an example.
See, now everything you say, and this is typical of a lot of conversations we have, everything you say is sounds perfect. You sound really intelligent and you sound really coherent, and it makes sense. This sounds right.
But
I didn't enjoy it. I don't know, it sounds like I should have enjoyed it.
Yeah.
I think when, as you say, you take a spread like the one where, like the centerfold where the comic folds open,
yep,
and you've got Spider-Man whipping around buildings, dealing with his bullet wound, trying not to pass out, flying around, crashing. I think that's Romita at his best. That's playing to his strengths. It's beautiful. It's like the slim body of Spider-Man. It's like a Giacometti sculpture. It's perfect and lovely, and the lines are wonderful. But I feel like when people are standing around and talking,
like next page, when the cops are talking.
Well, yeah, he's better at faces, kind of. It's a bit fashion drawing, like 80s fashion drawings when he draws just people. And it bothers me, and I have a hard time connecting with them. Yeah, all the scenes where people are just standing around talking, especially the very beginning opening scene, maybe it's just how awful that hat looks on that woman, but I just don't buy it. And also, Osborn is emaciated in this particular.
Oh, he's been emaciated throughout. He's very thin throughout this whole past year. I don't know. But I don't know why.
So's his girlfriend. His girlfriend has no ass. Literally, yeah. No ass. Her knee is bigger than her ass. It's just stupid. It's just bad and lazy, and it annoys me. And yes, the lines are great. You know, the lovely, lovely line he does, always dynamic and exciting. But the fight scenes are the best, you know?
Well, I'll let you in on a little secret, is that the talkie-talkie scenes, you just read through those really quickly and get to the fight scene.
Yeah, because I like reading his fight scenes, and yeah. I can do that.
Yeah.
But I just, I don't know, it's everything you said, it sounds like the recipe for a great book.
Yeah.
And it was disappointing for me.
Oh well.
I think I don't read this book, and I think the reason is that I'm afraid it's going to be disappointing. At this point, it's so Spider-Man, Amazing Spider-Man specifically, is the book that I feel like I've been burned on the most. It's the one that I want to like the most, and I haven't enjoyed it for a good 15 years. I don't think I've enjoyed it since the first couple issues I bought.
Yeah,
and I just can't go through it again.
All right. I can understand that. I can't blame it.
It's not that bad. I mean, if you can borrow someone else's, I wouldn't spend money on it, but you could certainly borrow Ron's and have a look.
Well, that would be very difficult. He lives across the country. But still.
Well, I mean, you know what I mean. It's worth a look. I definitely say it's worth a look if you can borrow someone else's and not spend money on the thing. No. Yeah, not my pick of the week, obviously.
A lot of people were gunning. They thought, there's no way. There's no way that Ron isn't going to make C.B. Cebulski very happy this week and not pick Darkhawk number one as his pick of the week.
Now, I'll be honest with you. I read Darkhawk number one as the number... Darkhawk number one was the first book I read. In fact, I read it walking from the store back to my house. That's how excited I was for it. Did you pick it up, Josh? Or?
I didn't.
So I'm flying solo here because I know Sonya didn't.
Well, I've got it in front of me so I could read it while you talk.
No, why don't you just focus on talking?
Okay, then.
Now.
So just to kind of recap, people, I'm a big fan of Darkhawk. Darkhawk number one was a comic in 1990 or 91 that I bought 25 copies of the first issue because I thought it was going to be a hit, and I've always had a soft spot for the character. And he's been, you know, he was a bit of a joke for most of the 90s, and then he kind of disappeared for a while, and then he reappeared recently in both C.B. Cebulski's series, The Loners, right? And then he recently appeared in Nova out of nowhere, running security for the science base that his brother was working at.
You know why they do that, right? Have those little appearances so that they can retain the rights to the characters, just so no one can say, "Well, you're not using that."
Yeah, I don't think Darkhawk is ever really in danger of that.
It's not like there's a bunch of copyright people going, listen, if we just stay quiet and bide our time, we'll be able to publish a Darkhawk comic that we can sell to 8,000 people.
Or eight.
So this picks up kind of tying both of those two kind of dangling plot threads together. And so we get introduced, and Darkhawk is now, he's moved back in with his mother and his little brothers, and he's working as the security chief at this science place. Not that he has any background in security at all. He just happens to be somebody with powers. And it started off really promising. I was like, okay, cool. You know, did the exposition, and it kind of could bring anybody up to speed. And then there was a scuffle at his job, and he gets into a fight and all that kind of deal. And then it takes this weird left turn dealing with the fact that he's got anger issues and he's not in control of the amulet that gives him his powers, and it makes him hurt people when he doesn't want to. And I was just like, oh God. And then it got thrust. He went right back to that loners group who have that like superhero anonymous, you know, support group.
Right.
And it got right thrown back to there. And so he goes back to that group, and there's a big argument there that just was forced. And then it ends with somebody crashing down from the skies, and it's someone in a Darkhawk costume. Chris Darkhawk was like, I thought I'm the only one. And then the guy's like the typical kind of like Green Lantern, like, oh, you've got so much to learn, you know, like that sort of scenario. And it just wasn't good. It wasn't good. I'm sorry.
That must be to say that for various reasons. Well, thank you for being honest with us.
And I don't know. And not to say that I don't think Darkhawk is a bad character. I don't know if C.B. Cebulski is a good writer.
Ooh.
Not at all. I mean, there's some things he does that I like, but in this kind of standpoint, in this case, I just didn't like it at all. But what's really cool about it is that they reprinted the entire first issue of the original series, the issue that I bought 25 copies of. So if you want to see some sweet Mike Manley art in the back, you should check that out.
Sounds like a porn star.
Yeah.
Mike Manley. No, which you could read verbatim. Like, you didn't actually need to read it. You were just reading through it as if you'd seen the movie 100 times. Well, are you going to buy the next one?
Yeah. Yeah.
Crazy.
So, wonder of all wonders, I bought an issue of Cable this week. What happened?
Nothing.
Wow. What? I bought this because Jamie McKelvey was on it, and maybe it was morbid curiosity. Maybe it was the fact that I like the way that Straczynski writes comics or birds.
Me too. Yeah, me too.
You know what? I actually, and I had read the issue before this in preparation for this Straczynski interview we did a little while back. I actually liked this. It was fun. I don't know if I want to keep reading the series forever, but it's an interesting thing.
No, I did too. I mean, like, they've been doing this whole Lone Wolf and Cub-esque type thing where Cable has the mutant baby, but she seems to be growing very quickly, which is a convenient plot device. And
it's more like those Bad Angel episodes where he had a son, right?
Right, yeah, exactly.
Oh my God, and now he's 15 tomorrow. Woo!
But I thought Straczynski's dialogue was really nice. It was like really the exchange between the girl and Cable was really kind of cute at times. And I thought the plot device of moving this, it moved the story very quickly. You know, like, yes. You know, a lot happened in a short period of time, but it made sense throughout the entire thing, which I thought was really good. And as much as I hate Guru FX when they color Jamie's art, it wasn't as bad as it was.
I was going to say that because I was expecting it to be really bad, because I remember how bad you guys complained about it. Was the Nightcrawler story he did?
Yeah.
And I was like, oh, this isn't that horrible. It was toned down enough that I got it. What's funny is that I started reading it, and I was just expecting McKelvey, but the first section of it is done by
Olivetti,
and I was like, wow, his style really looks different. And then I got to the credits, it was like, oh, okay, that makes more sense.
Yeah.
Boy, that's really very – you know what? I thought that the one thing that was really nice about this was there was an overall sense of menace.
Yeah.
Like the fact, like, they kept going forward, and you're hoping right along with the characters that when they get to the next time thing, basically they're zipping forward, and all life is gone on the planet, and so they go forward in time a couple hundred years, and hoping that maybe
the whole comic. It was the whole comic.
It's one part.
I don't know if
anybody remembers this about Sonny, but she doesn't actually like any comics.
I just have very high standards. That's
it's one part.
See, in Lone Wolf and Cub, things happen.
Right.
Yeah, they kill a guy, and then they went somewhere else, and there was a hooker, and then they killed another guy. Repeat that. $28, $10 issues.
Where's the death? That's all I can say. No, you have to admit it was a little bit repetitive.
It's the middle. It's the first part of a story. It's the first chapter.
Yeah.
Like the very end of it, they fall into a really big hole. How much more symbolic can you get?
Yeah, I fell into a fucking hole.
I thought the dialogue you mentioned, but the actual interactions with the little girl I felt were very authentic and very sweet.
Yeah.
It was a good part of a first story, and I thought for a guy who's always made fun of Cable the entire time I've known about him, I was not lost. I was not disinterested. I didn't think it was silly. It was good.
Yeah.
It was nice.
And didn't he do a nice job of making her look like a child? I mean, it's one of the hardest things. If anyone ever read Power Pack, we all know it's very difficult to draw children.
Yeah.
And apart from unless you're apparently a Japanese comic book artist and then you're very good at it. But all other, outside of manga, they almost never look like children. They look like tiny midgets. And I think he did a quite nice job of making her look small and vulnerable in comparison to Cable's manly figure.
And I also
so he had to put the hip girl haircut on her. Couldn't help it.
Of course, right out of Suburban Glamour.
I like her hair.
I did like how the narration flip flop between the two of them. That was a nice touch too. So Cable. Yeah, I was pleasantly surprised by it. And this is a case where I'll buy it for Jamie's art. And I don't know if I'll stick around after he leaves or not. But on the Dwayne Swarzynski tip, Mortal Iron Fist number 22. I've been really enjoying Iron Fist until this issue.
Oh, well, this would have been my pick of the week.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah, I love it. It was a complete and total change of...
Total change of direction.
Well, not really. It was just like, flip the rug out from under you, and now there's just a whole different thing going on.
Yeah.
That's part of the overall story, and it'll change, but it was just... It was like the basically they wake up and they find themselves in this hellish world. It's the eighth world, which you never liked that part of the Rubik's Fractal.
I was just gonna say all the mystical stuff and the eighth cities and the seventh city and all that kind of stuff. That's when I tone right out. I zone right out.
But
same here. Considering I like fantasy comics with Iron Fist, I always like the less fantasy stuff in it
I like the street level stuff. Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, he's great on the street with people around him.
Yep, exactly.
Well, I like the fact that he's with these other groups of fighters, the weapons. And like I like his relationship with the Fat Cobra now. Like it's just like it's a funny little thing, and it's what this issue reminded me of. It was really tense. The whole paradigm shifts, but it's like that episode of Battlestar Galactica, the first regular episode, 33.
Yeah.
Like they can't rest. It just keeps going. There seems to be no way out of it. And I love that sense of tension. And even if I don't know if you don't like that style of story, I like the it's like a new rug pulled out from under you. You got to start in a different place. It's gonna lead back around to the other thing, but it's still the character in the middle of it who I like. And I had a lot of fun with this.
Okay, that's fine. You're allowed. What else did you have fun with? Did you have fun with the boys?
I'm really close to not reading this book anymore. However, I literally sit on the fence every time. However. Because there's a lot of it that I like and there's a lot of it that I don't. And one of the things that I loved about this issue is basically this was a device so that Garth Ennis could sort of make fun of the way that Americans deal with St. Patrick's Day.
Best comic ever!
And that part of it was great. But the other part of it, which is the actual series of The Boys, I'm really over. I was like, okay, this issue is going to be a tipping point one way or the other if I decide I want to go with it. And I loved half of it. I loved the personal side of it that was the writer sort of speaking to us through the characters. But the other part of it is like I, with just more of these depraved characters, which I've seen a billion times. But I think Sonya, the part.
I think they address that though. And he's like, look, these people don't have boundaries or they don't know what's sexually appropriate. And of course, then he mocks himself for using that language, which I am right there with him. But, sure. You know, that seemed like what the comic was also about was understanding, beginning to understand that this is not going to work at all.
Well, yeah, but this is 27 straight issues of that.
Yeah, that probably gets a bit tired.
I mean, like, literally, there's been no progress in that time. Character-wise, like, Huey is the only character who's made any character development. He's the only person we know anything about or care about. Mm. It's just there's not quite enough there for me to hang my hat on, and otherwise it gets by in a lot of, like, trying to be funny, but I'm over the joke.
Mm.
So while I liked this issue, I don't know if I'm going to buy this anymore.
Do you think it's that Ennis is only good for short runs or shortish runs?
No, not at
like
all.
Like finite runs or something like that.
I think Ennis can do all sorts of different types of stories, and I don't like all of the kinds of stories that he does. As far as him doing long runs, I mean, Preacher's, you know, if not Punisher. My favorite.
Punisher.
You know, Punisher, his Hellblazer stuff, you know, he can go years and pull stuff out.
Well, no, see, I think after a while with Punisher... With Punisher and with Hellblazer and with Preacher, I think there were points when he fell into a little rut.
Interesting.
I don't think at any point during Preacher there was ever a point that I was like, oh, I wish this would hurry up or I wish I could get out of this. And if I did think that, he usually hooked me into it enough. I remember like in Salvation, you know, at first I was like, oh, I don't want to do this. But then, you know, in the middle of it, I was like, okay, wait, yes, let's do this. So...
I just recently reread Son of Man to try and like it because I do like Ennis so much. And I hated it so much that I stopped reading for a while. And so I do know, and there were a few issues, filler issues that he did of Preacher that made me hate it. And so I know he's capable of doing just tedious, childish, juvenile, disgusting shit for ages. And then just redeeming himself madly. So, you know, I've come to expect it. It's like the way in Ian Banks' novels, he's a science fiction writer, he will do something that makes you kind of want to throw up in the middle of each book he does, but it's okay because the book is so amazing.
Yeah. And it's I like think that. There's yeah. the ratio of, in this book is just off for me. There's hints of what I want, but it's 2+ years now. And, you know, and I love Derek Robertson. He's one of my favorite artists. And, I, you know, I love Garth Ennis most of the time, but, you know, not for everything. So... That's I'm going to come to grips with that. That's fine.
Mm. Okay. But didn't you love what he said about Americans?
Well, I am an American.
He said, didn't you find it really funny?
Sort of, except he was sort of making fun of the fact that Americans... He was making fun of the fact that Americans try to identify with their cultural roots. And he was coming at it from the point of view of a European, as opposed to understanding it from the point of view... Which I don't disagree with. He's absolutely right, but like... You know, as a person, I've identified with the fact that you know, I come from Irish people or something like that. And because it's such a giant, homogenous country, we like to try to relate to something. I think that.
But don't you see, like, to the rest of the world, that's fascinating because you are such a powerful, incredibly youthful, vibrant country. And so to deny that and say, oh, I'm Irish, I'm Italian, I'm German, I'm French. It's so strange to us. It's so...
Hey, you're half American. Don't say
and
like,
when I live... It's okay.
It's when it's convenient. No, I know.
But I wasn't born here. And so I find this fascinating. And I think part of it is we have a fascination with a denial of such a fantastic culture. Whereas
it's not a denial. It's wanting to have a thing to relate to.
Well,
and
well, part of it, I think, is because there's no history. I mean, like right. for example, my family in America started in the 1930s or 40s. That's not a that's not a terribly long period of time, but there's a long history of my family going back in Italy. So
exactly.
so for whatever reason, I connect to the fact that I am Italian. You know, even though I'm not Italian, I've been to Italy twice. You know what I mean? Like it's like I'm
which,
I'm
which
I'm
has American, a much yeah. richer history and culture than that of Long Island in the last 60 years.
Exactly, exactly.
But I don't know what my family. I mean, I know that they weren't English. My family weren't English 2-3 generations back, and I don't think that relates to who I am at all. It's very strange to me.
This is a whole other show.
Yeah, this is
a,
this
sorry, sorry.
It's okay.
But I just think it's worth looking at in the comic because I think what he's saying is this is really strange, and I think it gives it lends credence to the whole examination of this team of reprobates, because maybe the reason they're not able to control themselves or deal is because they don't identify or have pride in their own country and their sense of self.
Yeah.
No, and that part is interesting. I like that he writes from that perspective. But the thing is, if I didn't know, like, I know who Garth Ennis is. I know he's from Northern Ireland and he lives in America, and so he's got this perspective on things. So, you know, I think that's interesting, but does that really have anything to do with the story? I don't know.
Mm-hmm. I get you.
Who's to say?
Who knows? So, so moving on, Buffy the Vampire Slayer number 22, another one-shot. Last issue was a little disappointing with the socialite vampire who's, you know, turning the world against the Slayers. This issue,
this wasn't as strong, was it?
No, this issue was stronger than the last issue. I really enjoyed the vampy cat.
Yeah, because we like Sanrio.
Yeah, exactly. There's a little Sanrio-esque character of a little cat with vampire teeth, and it turns out it was alive and was a vampire, and then there was a whole boatload of them, and they all formed.
Oh, no. Not a vampire. It likes to climb inside your body and run it.
Right, yeah, exactly.
Yay!
But they're vampires.
Vampy cat!
But they're vampires in nature with the red eyes and the teeth and everything. And there's a big fight, and then they all form into one huge vampy cat where they become the Swell, and they actually says, "We are Legion," which I thought was funny. But yeah, so I don't know. It was stronger than the last issue, but this title is just kind of languishing. Like, we need a big story arc.
I have to say, no, it has the line, "Eat their fucking ovaries."
Yeah, it does.
Tiny little Hello Kitties with vampire fangs, yellow vampire fangs, en masse screaming, "Eat their fucking ovaries." That's funny shit. That is funny.
That was funny, but I think the what made the last issue not as good and what made this issue not as good is that Buffy was barely in the last issue and Buffy's in this issue for 2 pages.
And doing a bit of a Sandman, aren't they?
Yeah, exactly. The book's called Buffy the Vampire Slayer. It's got to have Buffy in it. I don't know.
And also, who cares? I mean, I really don't mean to be crass, but I don't care who she's sleeping with. And it's tedious.
I enjoyed that bit.
They're always talking about who she's having sex with, and it just seems really weird. I would be very uncomfortable if everyone that worked for me was talking about who I had sex with.
Right, but that's true to the tone of the TV show and everything. I mean, it doesn't feel out of the ordinary. I mean, the relationships are...
Yeah, but in the TV show, she didn't run an entire army.
Yeah, that's true.
It's like she's a corporate head and you're going, "Hey, Bill Gates fucked someone." Like, that just wouldn't happen.
Crazy.
People do that.
All right, so...
Okay.
That said, we're going to take out a couple of minutes to let you hear about Afro Samurai Resurrection.
Afro Samurai!
Samuel L. Jackson returns in the sequel to the best-selling anime of 2007, Afro Samurai Resurrection. Afro Samurai avenged his father and found a life of peace, but a beautiful and deadly woman is forcing him back into the game. Starring Samuel L. Jackson and Lucy Liu, with new beats from the RZA featuring 2 hours of extras. Get the Blu-ray and DVD on February 3rd. Afro Samurai Resurrection. One brother, one path, 1,000 deaths.
Visit AfroSamurai.com for more details.
All right, so it was a little less than minutes. How about that? But so don't forget to check out Afro Samurai at AfroSamurai.com. Comes out on Blu-ray and DVD on February 3rd with beats by the RZA. We got a lot of books to get through, so let's blow through them. X-Men First Class Finals number 1. X-Men First Class got canceled as an ongoing, but now there's going to be a series of miniseries. And I just love what Jeff Parker does with these characters. And this issue stood out for me because he's transitioned them into the later 60s period where they all have their independent costumes. Like Angel has the white costume with the halo on it, and Cyclops has the blue and yellow that we're used to, and Marvel Girl's got the green costume. So I don't know. And it's just a fun in-between continuity story that, you know, I don't know why. It's something really idyllic about what Parker does with these characters in this time period. Yeah.
Okay, no. I'm sorry. This is such a bad comic. This is everything that's wrong with comics right now is in this comic.
We're 0-6, by the way.
No, I liked Buffy. I really like Buffy. And I like the boys, actually. Yeah.
There you go. So we're 2-6. I don't know. I think this book serves a purpose for people who are casual X-Men readers.
oh, no, it's going to destroy their minds. They won't know what good X-Men is. No. I mean, the good thing is her mask slipped down and they talked about practical things that they never do in comics.
And Cyclops complaining about them all not having uniforms.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, that was a funny bit.
Yeah, that was a funny bit.
Okay. Dynamo 5, number 19. Again, I keep saying the same thing when I talk about this book, that this is if you want a superhero book, that, you know, the best superhero book on the market right now is Dynamo 5 for my money.
I like this.
Yeah, wasn't this good?
Yeah, fight, fight, fight.
Yeah, this is a big... So this was... the team has been kind of separated for the past couple of issues, and one team member, Scrap, put together kind of a mishmash team, and they got their asses kicked, and now the original Dynamo 5 came back together and saved their butts, and it was really... It was kind of like the team kicking butt. And we've got the hint of a little subplot of a, you know, sinister kind of organization that is, you know, with making a power play with little people with the tattoos on their backs, back of their necks. Yeah, Dynamo 5 is great, and if you want to check it out, just pick up any issue. You can jump right on.
Hmm. Yep. Punisher number 2, the second of the Remender Opeña arc. Apparently after, I think, 5 issues, Opeña is stepping away for a little bit, and there'll be another artist, just if you were curious. I liked this, and again, I don't really like the Punisher, but this was a Punisher I really liked. The sort of, I guess there's a new character, he's like a microchip, but he's not exactly a microchip, which is whatever. But the thrust of this is that this guy gives Frank the idea that you need to wage sort of a PR war and show yourself kicking all these bad guys' asses and send it to the media.
Cool.
And so, like, he goes and he blows up all this stuff and he kills these drug dealers and he does it, and it all gets into the paper. And it's like, see, the Punisher's not such a bad guy.
Because he has a camera.
Yeah.
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 He never thought of that.
It's not enough to carry a gun. You got to carry a camera.
Yeah. It's a pretty savvy sort of look at how you would actually have to do this in the media. And then at the end, the hood shows up.
Oh, cool.
It's kind of, they pack it full of stuff, but it doesn't, I don't feel like it really moves the story along as fast as I'd like it to. That would be my only criticism, but I was very happy with it.
Yeah, well, and it's a different Punisher. I mean, it's the Punisher. Yeah. It's not the NS Max Punisher. It's the Punisher in the Marvel Universe and all that kind of deal. So, yeah.
And I like the Punisher for that reason. I like this part.
So the much ballyhooed Secret Warriors number 1 came out with written by Bendis and Jonathan Hickman, and Jonathan Hickman's entry into the Marvel Universe. Was it complicated?
Yep. Yeah.
Yes.
It certainly was. It's vintage Hickman.
Yeah.
You know, this is not to say bad. I want to make that clear. It's not the same thing, but it's meaty. Like it takes a while to read. There's a lot of stuff to take in. I'm looking at it. There doesn't seem to be an awful lot of words, but I guess there's an awful lot of information.
Oh, no, there's tons of words. Get into the last page, the last 2 pages, and it's more words than pictures.
Listen, I just read Kevin Smith's Daredevil. This is not a lot of words.
But you know what's nice is this is a nice companion piece to Iron Man if you're reading Invincible Iron Man.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah.
How so?
Well, because they're both dealing with the same shit with this Dark Reign bollocks, and because... You know, I can really never get too much Nick Fury. And, yeah, I don't know. As my brother pointed out, Obama's in it, back of Obama's head, apparently.
I'm getting sick of that, by the way.
Yeah, really.
I mean, that's enough. It takes me out of it. I'm like, oh, put Obama in again.
Great, great art.
I hate the artist. I really, that's the one thing that bothers me about this book, is I can't stand the artist in this at all.
Well, he does muscles. Muscles all over the place. Muscles.
Too much.
The main
swelling
problem that
breasts.
I have is
Josh.
I don't mind the artist, but the main problem I have with this is that the main girl character who's in this the whole time looks exactly like Maria Hill. And I don't know who any of these people are at the end of this. Like, I've got some inklings about who some of the separate characters are. There's a lot of them, and I don't know them, and I don't feel like I got them completely straight. Also,
she's Daisy.
Whatever. She looks exactly like Maria Hill.
I know. No, bigger boobs.
Well, that depends on the artist. But she's also used in the same capacity. She's the person who's running things right under Nick Fury. So, like, it's hard to get yourself out of the mindset of that I should be looking at Nick, you know, at Maria Hill, but I'm not.
Do you know why that is, though? It's because, really, women with short, dark hair and large breasts are commanding.
Sure. Then give
inherently,
her a ponytail. And at the end, there was some Jonathan Hickman graphic design.
Yeah.
As you can tell by the circles.
Yep.
With lots of information. This was pretty good. I think he'll settle into the style of doing these kind of comic books, and it'll get a little easier to deal with. Yeah. Or you'll get more used to reading it, I guess, is the other option. was okay. It was all right. I didn't love it.
All right.
I thought it was pretty rich. I really enjoyed it.
I'm shocked that you don't agree with what I said.
There's a sketch. Oh, there's a sketchbook in the back too, where I really like the art more. And I think perhaps it'd be nicer if they did something like captured his pencils, like
That's the thing. I mean, I don't know if I don't like the art because it's a victim of the evils of Marvel digital coloring. Which I think it really is. Yeah, because this artist was on Avengers: The Initiative, and that just ruined it for me. It's that muddy filter that they use now, that is just ruining arts for me. And I'm not, I agree with you. The pencils did look better.
The women he draws look a little bit like Strangers in Paradise, and I know you like.
I do. Yeah.
So his pencils definitely had a look of that, and it made me think maybe it'd be better if they didn't fuck around with it so much.
Yeah.
But the pencils are really nice in the back, aren't they?
Yeah.
Interesting. That's very interesting.
All right, so there was one last book you guys wanted to talk about, some confusion.
I went to pick up Connor's books, and I had his little – because he's sick, so I'm a nice guy. Yeah, that's right. I drove them to him today. And one of the things on his list was I Am Legion.
I Am Legion.
I Am Legion, The Dancing Faun, issue 1 of 6.
I Am Legion.
There's nowhere this joke is going to go that isn't going to be bad. So I'm going to...
Because that's Conan's kind of thing. He likes that. Legion.
He's huge into illness comics.
I Am Legion.
I'm going to push through.
Okay.
This is published by Devil's Due, and then under that it says Humanoids. And it's written by Fabian Nuri, and of course the reason
it's one of those French books, right?
Well, it was drawn by John Cassaday.
Okay.
Which made me say, well, I will pick this up as well.
Yeah.
And it is a beautiful, beautiful book, and I don't know what it is. I'm not sure what I read.
I'll tell you what happened. About 2 or 3 years ago, at least, this and the next book came out as one volume, and it was just sold. And I said, this was great. When's the next one coming out? And everyone said, oh, no, that was it. It's like, it doesn't make any sense, though. And everyone said, no, you're wrong. That's it. And I was like, but it's half a story. What the hell? And now, apparently, he's going to finish it off. So then this and the next one will be reprints of the big book that came out. And then there'll be more. I don't know how many more, but they will actually tell the bloody story.
Do you know what this story is about?
Not yet.
Okay. That's fine.
But it looks great.
It does. It takes place in the 40s in England. So it's got something to do.
It's gripping.
Yeah. No, it's good. And I believe it might be vampires, but I'm not sure yet.
All right.
Absolutely stunning art. I think it's Cassidy at his best. And I think the coloring is fantastic. And everything about it is just lovely.
It's a very nice presentation, too, at $350. I think that should be the new price point, by the way.
Yeah, and it's got this fat cover and everything, and this matte varnish on it. It's gorgeous.
Yeah, $350 is a lot less harder of a pill to swallow.
It is, and you can make good comics like that, so what the heck?
You know, it's funny, because I was thinking, because we just, the video episode that came out this week was about Marvel Knights, and we were talking about, and I digged up my old copy of Ash, that book that Quesada and Palmiotti did in, like, 1997, 98, and that was $2.50.
Yeah.
Yeah. So
I'm not sure what your point is.
Well, no, everyone's freaking out over, in 1997, 1998, books were like $1.99, $2, like they went more expensive. You can go, you can go more expensive if you give enough quality. I'm sorry, I'm going down a rat hole. So, all right.
You certainly are.
Yeah.
Legion. Anyway.
No, it was a lad. It cost tuppence. Yeah. We lived in a hole and our parents would dice on our grave every night and sing.
And say, I am Legion.
What a perfect time to mention our sponsor, Discount Comic Book Service.
Yep.
With monthly specials of up to 75% off and 40% off major publishers with a flat rate of shipping of $5.95 for all U.S. orders, you can buy anything in previews. With over 5,400 trade paperbacks in stock and available for order. And listen, they haven't said this, but I almost guarantee you no lesions. You can track your orders online. Go to www.dcbservice.com for your lesion-free shopping.
All right. But if you go to ifanboy.com/comics, you can see all the comics that come out every week, and you can pick your pull list, and you can come back and rate and review them. And we want to highlight a couple of the user reviews. And Josh, why don't you give us the first one?
First one is going to be from Cammy Knoxville, who talked about Astonishing Tales number 1, gave the story a 4 and the art a 5, both on a 5-point scale. Nobody made this their pick of the week. And he says, I guess Marvel realized the 2000 AD format really works well, and why not apply it to the Marvel Universe? You can constantly introduce new writers and artists on a title like this, much like 2000 AD did.
I thought that was a really interesting take on what is basically a, you know, them dredging up the old Astonishing Tales from the early 60s and just kind of putting out an anthology book.
Which is older than...
Yeah, older than 2000 AD. Yeah, exactly. So... I don't know. It was interesting. This kind of slipped under the radar. I thought it was really interesting. On the cover, it had like Mojo and Iron Man and like all these various characters. And I don't know. But it's another anthology, which who knows how long it will stick around.
Yeah, they don't tend to stick. But they used to be the regular format. You know?
Exactly. Yeah.
Comic book stories never longer than 8 pages.
Marvel 2-in-1, Marvel, you know, like all those old ones. So.
Well, even, you know, like Action Comics number 1, the whole thing was a Superman story. That was 8 pages.
Yeah.
Amazing Fantasy 15.
Yep.
You know.
Cool. So, and then finally, we didn't want this to be a completely DC devoid show, so we went to our users to get a review from Neb, who reviewed Final Crisis Legion of Three Worlds. 32% of the people of iFanboy made this their pick, so this book had a huge pull, yet Neb gave the story a 2 out of 5 and the art a 4 out of 5. And Neb says, I must have taken dumb pills this morning. With this miniseries, Geoff Johns did a gutsy thing. He took a complicated set of superheroes that comprise a giant team and then multiplied by 3. What's resulted for me, at least, is that there are so many characters with so many name variations from so many different parallel universes that I'm cross-eyed. And that's why I stopped buying this book after issue 1, because I can't do the Legion. I just can't do it.
And also, it's a part of a story that's already over.
Yeah, exactly.
So there's that.
But the cover looked beautiful.
One of the covers looked beautiful.
One of the covers, yeah.
I stupidly bought the other one, of course.
Oh, did you buy this book? Was it good? Or?
Yeah, no, I haven't read it yet. I'm doing this thing. I decided that with all the fuss around Final Crisis, after like the third issue when people were spazzing out, I thought best to take them all and put them in a giant pile and read them all at once so I don't get confused. But now I'm scared of the pile.
Well, isn't there – there's an order to – didn't Morrison say that there's an order to the books?
I downloaded the order.
Okay.
And now it's like a fucking, you know – thing, like it's like a thesis I have to write or something. I don't know. I sat around all weekend and read like half of them and got really excited and confused all at the same time.
Okay.
But I would have picked this one up anyway because it's Perez.
Yeah.
And hey, give it up. I mean, old school, you know?
Yeah, just Legion, I just can't keep track of the characters. Everybody's either a boy or a lad and they all have the same powers, but they don't, and they fly in the rings, and I just can't do it.
Lad.
So go to ifanboy.com/comics, make your pull list, leave your reviews, maybe you'll make it on the show. On to the emails. Our first email comes from Don, who asks, did any of you read Kurt Busiek's Untold Tales of Spider-Man when it was coming out? What a great series that was. I wasn't a big fan of Spider-Man, nor a fan of the Silver Age at the time, but boy, Untold Tales of Spider-Man really won me over. I might even say that it helped save my fanboy soul at the time. It showed me the light. I think the series is really underappreciated. Oh, and I should preface that he's asked 3 questions in this email, so that's the first one. And I read Untold Tales of Spider-Man when it came out. I loved it. I loved it so much that I believe, Josh, I gave it to you and Connor as a trade paperback for Christmas 1 year. Yeah. For those who don't know, Kurt Busiek basically wrote stories that happened in between the early issues of Spider-Man. So in between issue 3 and 4, he told the story. And in between issue 4 and 5, he told the story. And they were just perfect Silver Age stories. They were great. Is that my usual boisterous, you know, I love it description, Josh? Or did you enjoy
it? Yeah, pretty much. They weren't really my taste.
No. Fuck you.
No, I mean, but what you said is what they are. I don't really like that.
Yeah.
But if you do, that's really good. And they weren't as difficult to get through as some of the actual older ones.
Right.
That's definitely the case. And
anytime you get the half Peter Parker face, half Spider-Man face, always a good thing. So.
Yeah.
All right, so the next his next question is, 2 other series that got me through the 90s, ironically, were reprint series of stuff from the 80s. In particular, I'm talking about X-Men Classic and Essential Vertigo Swamp Thing. Due to shoddy 80s printing, some of those X-Men classics are still the best productions of certain Uncanny X-Men issues. It wounded me when they canceled X-Men Classic. But when they canceled Essential Vertigo Swamp Thing, it was actually the last straw that made me get out of comics for almost 10 years. Spooky black and white reprints of Moore's seminal run. It became my favorite monthly book immediately. Any of you guys ever have an inordinate fondness for a reprint series? Back then, when back issues were more expensive and when most everything hadn't been traded, we needed those types of series.
Oh, what a great question.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean,
it's funny because I started buying X-Men Classic when I discovered the X-Men, and I didn't understand continuity and stuff like that, so it really confused me.
Oh, I could just imagine poor little kid Ron being like, huh, what?
This doesn't make any sense.
I don't get it. See, I was a bit older, and I had been buying X-Men and saving my pennies to try and get those back issues.
Yep.
And so when they started publishing Classic X-Men, I was so happy.
Yep.
And then... what had happened was, because I got into X-Men through these weird English black and white reprints. And so I've always had a fondness for black and white reprints because I think you get to see the quality of the art.
Yeah.
And sometimes, often in my opinion, if it's good art, it really is lovely to see it without the mess of color on top of it.
Well, that's a reason why those Marvel Essentials and those DC Showcases are just so awesome, because they're black.
Such great value too.
Yeah, the pencils and all that kind of deal, yeah.
But I also, those Swamp Things, some of the best stories ever written in comics. I mean, that's where Alan Moore, you see him cutting his teeth and really exploring what comics could be and how you could communicate things you could never communicate in any other medium. Yeah. Those are ones that I have those, and I also bought those books that they came out with a few years ago, and that's nice for lending out, because I love, one of the main things I do with my books is lend them out. I love to turn people on to that, because people who don't like comics will often read something like Swamp Thing because it's not a superhero comic, and it's a pretty weird book.
Yeah. So then his last question is to me. Ron, do you know how many copies of the X-Men Alpha one-shot sold? I took my copy out of storage the other day, held it in my hands, and thought, for what it is, it's a great product. And it's really funny. I don't know what the sales numbers were on it, but X-Men Alpha was a one-shot that kicked off the Age of Apocalypse kind of alternate storyline, when they went and they deviated and said, okay, it's a world where Apocalypse rules, and Wolverine only had one hand.
What year was that?
That came out in February of 1995, and it's really interesting because that issue, X-Men Alpha, was co-written by Scott Lobdell and Mark Waid, and it was drawn by Roger Cruz and Steve Epting. And I do remember that being an awesome one-shot, because it basically was the first issue of this whole few months in the world of Apocalypse, and it set the groundwork for months of stories, and I remember it being really, really good. It also had a big chromium cover, which was kind of annoying, but it was a really good one-shot in terms of like a, you know, X-Men Elseworlds almost kind of story. Yeah. Hmm. That was a good one.
I have no idea what anyone's been talking about.
You know, Josh, I think you'd really enjoy Swamp Thing.
I have all the Swamp Thing trade paperbacks. It's sort of an irrelevant question, you see.
Have you read them?
So you do know what he's talking about.
Yeah. I do, but the question was about these reprints that came out monthly that I have no recollection. Yeah. I mean, it's almost like that. They're gone. We have a trade paperback program now. Yeah. Although it might have been neat to read them in the way that they came out originally.
Yeah.
On a monthly basis.
Well, I think the monthly reprints, what they did was they allowed somebody to just kind of taste at a lower price point. And it was if I remember correctly, it was a good way to pull people in. And I'd be curious to see if they would. Now they spend every little dime on making new series and things like that, when maybe they should have a reprint program, you know?
Yeah. Well, they do. That's what the trade paperbacks are. And I think that going forward, now, that's the way to hook people.
Yeah.
But I personally would rather see them reprint the original early X-Men as teenagers than rewrite them in this X-Men, final bollocks?
First class.
Yeah.
Those are available. You can get those in the Essentials.
Well, no, you can get them in the Essentials, but is a kid going to go pick up that phone book-sized Essentials for $15?
Yes.
Not.
I would argue that they're more likely to sell those than issues.
Interesting.
Well, I just think this first class thing, they're trying to say, hey, the X-Men could be young and relevant. And I'm saying they already were young and relevant. Why are you redoing this? Just put out the ones where they were.
Because if you try to sell 1962 comic books to a 15-year-old, you will get that handed back to you faster than healthy non-fried food.
You just said Americans want to have a sense of history and identity.
And there's nothing more history than USA X-Men comics by Jack Kirby and Stan Lee.
In 1960, I feel like that's one of the things that makes me proud to be here.
Sure, but kids ain't going to read it.
That's because they don't care about history, only you do.
No, because they're very difficult to read through, because they're very inaccurate.
Yeah, they are of a different time.
Anachronism.
That's the thing, yeah. I mean,
I have the Amazing Spider-Man omnibus, and I can read through the thing, and I can appreciate what's great about it, but it is not easy.
But it's important to note that those classic X-Men issues weren't reprinting the Kirby Stan Lee stuff, or even the Neil Adams stuff, or Roy Thomas stuff. It was reprinting the early Claremont Byrne stuff.
Nice. So,
and the Dave Gibbons?
Paul Smith.
That was it, yeah.
Yeah, anyway.
So it was not crazy early. It wasn't psycho early.
Yeah. Okay, well, moving on. So if you have a question you want to email us and get us to argue, you can email us at contact@ifanboy.com. And onto the voicemail, we got a question that is worth pondering.
This is Brian from Richmond. I'm actually calling because I was just looking at an X-Men issue with Terry Dodson art. And I was wondering if it makes you guys uncomfortable at all, like the clearly cheesecakey art that's out there. Like, I had an ex-girlfriend that used to look at it and kind of nod, and she goes, oh, I know why you got this. And it's not at all why I got that. And I feel like it just kind of helps create the image that we are adolescents and this is some adolescent hobby that we should grow out of. That's all. Also, have you guys ever dialed 800 fanboys? It's not you guys at all.
Yeah, so we haven't visited this in a while. Our voicemail number is 1-888-FANBOYS, not 1-800-FANBOYS, and that's something completely different. And do yourself a favor, don't dial it. So,
unless you're into that kind of thing.
Yeah, if you're into that kind of thing, then go to town. Go for it. Go for
That'd
it.
Be awesome.
Yeah. So
I wasn't aware they still had phone sex. No?
Yeah, there's this amazing thing called the internet now.
Yeah. Anyway, so Terry Dotsonard, and also curvy women in comic books, and does that kind of is that why we buy comics, or is that something that is?
I loved his answer, and he's like, no, that is not why I read it, like, because I know what that's
that's
like.
That's why I fucking read comics.
Well,
it's all about the babes.
There are things that I won't read on the subway, specifically for that reason.
Really?
Like I won't open up an issue with the boys on the subway just because I don't want to deal with the possible.
Well, yeah, yeah.
Sort of.
Come on, don't be such a pussy. No, it's totally funny when you're reading a comic and everyone around you looks really uncomfortable.
Yeah, I gotta go.
You know what, though? You know what? You're different than me, though. And
I am.
And
I'm confrontational and unpleasant. It's true.
No, but an attractive hip woman reading something like that is fine. But like, just a dude there, everyone thinks you're a pervert. There's no way around it. People like
it's
when
not me
that.
Reading. It's not me reading. I mean, because I don't think people are going to worry about me reading something with attractive women in it.
Sure.
But I was reading Kurosagi Corpse Delivery Service on the bus the other day, and I open it, and it's a whole story about someone that's reanimating corpses and then tying them up in this bondage gear, and then the whole family of the person who that dead body murdered kills the dead reanimated body while it's naked and hanging on the wall, gagged with a ball gag. And I'm reading this and I'm thinking, oh, everyone thinks I'm sick. Oh, well. So you just got to be like, oh, well,
I tend to think of – I actually have this thought in my head about the image of people who read comic books, and I'm aware of it, and I don't like the image of people that read comic books in the larger frame of people. So, like, I don't know if this is the way that – but like, the things that I really like, the styles of art that I've gravitated to as being my favorite kinds of art are pretty much exactly the opposite of the Terry Dodson, Frank Cho, Stefano Caselli sort of school of art. Whereas, like, the guys I like are Michael Lark and, you know, Sean Phillips and, you know, guys who don't draw like that at all.
Yeah. Yeah, I don't know. It's funny because I feel like I'm so desensitized to it where I don't even notice it anymore, where, like, I really, you know, like, it's not – Terry Dodson can draw a cover. You know, like, there was that one issue of X-Men that Dodson drew the cover and it was all the women, you know, of the X-Men world and boobs pushing out and stuff like that. And I see right through it now, you know, but that's a good question about the public appearance of that, and whether if I was reading it on the bus, whether, you know, I'd be, you know, people would be giving me, you know, looking at me askew, or if I'd be embarrassed or not. I don't think I would, but I mean, I agree with the guy. Like, that's not why I buy it. Like, I'm not buying it to fulfill some sort of male sexual fantasy.
Right.
You know,
but I kind of am, and that's the sad part. Like, I only picked up some of his Wonder Woman comics because I liked the way she looked.
you like the cut of her jib?
I think you know what I'm saying. No, she looked awesome. And I thought, hey, maybe Wonder Woman's got good again. And I bought some. I was caught by that. He has a nice line and he makes them look corpulent and zaftig, you know. And I thought, I want to read that. And I don't like girls that way, but it was fun. I don't know. It's fun to look at. And I don't think there's anything wrong with saying to your girlfriend, yeah, I like the way they look. It's fun. Like, it's not bad to find people physically attractive.
There's also,
but being
there's
accused
also,
of it when that's not what you're doing.
Right. But there's also there's also a huge double standard, though, because if you look at the men, it's not like the men are totally normal either. The men are...
I know.
Yeah, so...
I mean, the idea that we wouldn't read comics because... There's nothing wrong with reading comics because the people look good. I mean, I just don't... I think that's really dismissive of her to say that's the only reason.
Well, that's an ex-girlfriend, so I think he dealt with her. So
you know, right, she'd be on the curb and whatnot.
Yeah. So
yeah.
All right. So
hey, that's enough said.
If you have any questions that question why you read comics or your relationships, you can call us and leave us a voicemail at 1-888-FANBOYS. That's 1-888-326-2697, not 1-800-FANBOYS.
Are we offering dysfunctional relationship advice or sex line?
Constantly. Not, no, both.
Not this episode. We could. Like, we've done it. We've ruined relationships, I think. Definitely. So if you're listening to this, there's a chance that we have made it all the way through New York Comic Con unscathed. Beautiful show in tow that we're going to be ready to share with you soon.
It was cold. It was cold.
No, it won't have been cold.
Oh, it will have been cold.
No. The tenses are messing me up here, but Saturday and Sunday are not supposed to have been as cold.
Dude, I just got here from San Francisco. It's cold.
Yeah. It's going to be in the 50s this weekend.
Oh, fantastic.
It will have theoretically been in the 50s.
Okay.
Oh, the sun was shining and there was a tiny light frosting of rain, but it was sunny and warm today. It was lovely in San Francisco.
There will have been a party.
Which was a ton of fun. It was a blast.
So you say. Maybe Paul Cornell pulled out a gun. Yeah. I don't know. That would be awesome,
but man, Ron was so embarrassing.
Yeah,
God.
Exactly, yeah.
We're never going to live that one down.
Anyway, but so it was a lot of fun. So if you saw us in your Comic-Con, hopefully we weren't rude to you. And if we were, don't do a podcast about it.
I don't know what you mean.
So New York Comic Con, that was fun.
Lord knows why you'd want to support this mess, but if you did, iFanboy memberships are available and appreciated by us very much. You can go to ifanboy.com/store and take a look. We got our membership t-shirts are up there if you donate at the $10 a month or the $100 a year level, and I feel like I'm an NPR. And there's also the $4 a month or $40 a year, and then we'll send you a pack of buttons and stickers and stuff like that, and one random comic book. Read all about that on at that spot. But we do still need the help. There's also the limited edition Herm t-shirts, which are not necessarily in any way affiliated with DC Comics property Watchmen.
And you can find all that at ifanboy.com/store, where you can sign up for a membership or buy the Herm t-shirt. And don't forget, you got to be a member to get in on some of the really cool giveaways we've got coming up. We've got some really, really special coming up in about mid-February for the members. So sign up now so you can be a part of it.
I believe the Coraline giveaway is just about ending February 13th. The last day for you to sign up, and if you become a membership, there's 6 gift packs that they're going to have. So,
and there'll be a link to that in the show notes, so you can check that out. So go to ifanboy.com to find the show notes, and that's where you can also find my pick of the week review about Spider-Man, and you can find Connor's book of the month review about Scott Pilgrim, which we're going to talk about next time when he's back on the show, and as well as all the great conversations Sonia writes for us on ifanboy.com. So does Paul and Jimsky and Mike Romo, and we've got a great crew of folks writing. So definitely go to ifanboy.com, read about it every day of the week, something new about comics. It's all there for you, totally free.
Every Wednesday you can find a new video show at revision3.com/ifanboy or over at ifanboy.com. This past week we talked about Marvel Knights and the enormous impact that Joe and Jimmy brought and the changes that it wrought therefore after. And then this next week, I believe the show comes out on Valentine's Day, the Day of Love.
No, it does not. It comes out the Wednesday before Valentine's Day. Valentine's Day is on a Saturday this year, but on the 11th. On February 11th, our episode about romance comics comes out.
Nice.
Oh, God.
Look at that's you know what that is? That's appropriate and timely.
Yeah, look at that. So
wow. It's like we're thinking about these kind of things.
And you can find all the books that we talk about on the video show in our Amazon store. And you can go to ifanboy.com/Amazon where you pick those up. And purchasing stuff through at Amazon through that store helps us out in the process. And don't forget to go to ifanboy.com/store where you can buy all of our t-shirts. But you can also get the intern t-shirt as well as some iFanboy stickers at revision3.com/store.
Stay with me, everybody. You want to email us, you go to contact@ifanboy.com, or you want a voicemail, that would be 888-FANBOYS 326-2697. Again, really, the 1-800, it's a special kind of thing.
Not
so,
us.
Not us.
Nothing, please don't. It's nothing to do with us, really.
And
because you're making it sound like it's an ad for that. You got to stop mentioning it.
Yeah, we really should stop,
I imagine we've sent a lot of traffic their way.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think you might be. The wrong kind of traffic.
If you want to be our friend on the internet, and we'd like to be your friend on the internet, you can go to ifanboy.com/about, and that's where you can find all links to us on the various social networks out there, that, you know, like Facebook and MySpace and Goodreads and things like that, as well as the wonderful Twitter. And make sure you're following twitter.com/ifanboy for all the latest and greatest iFanboy Twitter news. So.
Sound like Mr. Rogers. Will you be our friend? Please be our friend. Are you my neighbor? I'm your neighbor.
I wish Fred Rogers would write us an iTunes review. If he did, that would be good. But if you want to write us an iTunes review, get over to iTunes, write one for the audio show if you never have, or perhaps the video show. That would be good. That's one of the best ways to help more people learn about the shows and the free content that is available to them.
Yes. So, we made it. Thank you, Sonia, for joining us. We appreciate it on the short notice, and we're sorry.
Oh, thank you for having
me. We're sorry we made you read at least 6 bad comics in your point of view.
Hey, but I learned about 2 new great ones.
Yeah, there you go. See? It's a learning experience. And that's
comics. You know,
and
comics is about a 20%.
Hey, in baseball, that's not a bad percentage right there. That's you're batting in the 200s. That's not bad. All right. So until next week, I'm Ron.
I'm Josh.
I'm Sonia.
Oh,
we did not. It was perfect. It was fine. Just be fine now, just be fine, just close your eyes. Now synapses. Every single Wednesday we have a new video come out at Revision.
Sorry, I found the one point in the script I didn't get correct. Sorry.
Okay. Nice. You're so professional.
I know. Carry on, power through.
Shit.
You didn't have to say it out loud.
Sorry, inner voice. Do it again. Sorry, go for it.
Three, two.